Welcome to Dear Watchers, a comic book omniverse podcast where we do a deep dive into the multiverse.
We are traveling through the storylines before and after that inspired or took inspiration from this week's amazing alternate universe. And your watchers on this journey are me, Guido.
And me, Uncle Rob, young man. Wait a second. Let me just kill this little bug crawling on my computer. Ow! Hello. This is Rob.
Oh,
I'm here.
That was too long.
There's a whole play. I gave you a whole journey. And joining
us. Moving right along.
Are special guest members of the Council of Watchers and whippersnappers themselves. Mike and Zach from Multiverse of Badness, a favorite podcast. Hi, Mike and Zach.
Well, hello, how are you doing? And whippersnapper for Zach may be accurate, but for me, I am the elder statesman of podcasting at a clean, crisp 50 years old. Aunt May is right in my age bracket of dating.
I wouldn't agree with whippersnapper for myself. I'm 32. I've got a mortgage.
Compared to Aunt May, you definitely are a whippersnapper.
Okay, yeah. Yes. I think that's how we're all whippersnappers.
Exactly. Although,
now, that makes you sense. Oh, have you seen Cocoon?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Yeah, the guy was like retiring at 57, and he looked as old as Aunt May, so I'm right in that bucket.
Well, that's what they were saying when Jennifer Lopez did Hustlers, and they were saying, well, she's the same age as the Golden Girls are on the Golden Girls. So, you know, our concept of aging has changed over the time. But thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what Multiverse of Badness is?
I would love to. It is a weekly comic book podcast where me and my old friend Mike over here, we find the weirdest storylines, dumbest character first appearances, whatever it is, and spend 25 minutes just picking it apart and having fun doing it, rating it at the end, and... yeah, it's good fun. Mike, anything you want to add to that?
No, you pretty much nailed it. We just have a good time reading comic books. I know you guys do a lot of research, which I love your podcast. I feel like I'm in my own multiverse of madness here. I feel like it's amazing. But yeah, we don't do all that stuff. We read a comic book and just talk stupid about it. As you saw when you were guests on our podcast to review, not to spoil anyone's idea of what we're doing talking about today, but I think we've already done it, the Golden Oldie and Aunt May is a superhero. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, yeah, Multiverse of Badness, if I could sum it up, would be 0% research, 100% opinion.
We didn't get the full Multiverse of Badness experience, though, because, Zach, you were not present.
Yes.
I had, if you may pardon the term, explosive diarrhea. The recording.
Yes, we heard. But we do listen to you every week, so we get to hear you. It's like we know you, even though this is our first time recording together.
Well, it's lovely to finally meet you, I'd say in person, but via the internet.
Yes.
Yes. And so can you each tell us what your history with either What If or Elseworlds or just stories that have to do with the multiverse is? Is it something you knew or liked or hated or didn't know?
You know what? I'll start out. Originally, I was collecting comics around the time of the first What If series. I think it was 77 to 83. I started collecting comics, I guess, as early as 9 or 10, but I really started getting into them about 12 or 13 at the end of this run. And I just always thought that What If was amazing, because I would start looking at old back issues. You know, you're in the, I guess they were dime bins back then. And I ran across the one where I know it was Ghost Rider, Spider-Woman, and somebody else. What if they were bad guys? I was like,
Captain Marvel.
Okay, I was like, oh my God, this is like mind-altering. So I really always enjoyed those. And then, of course, the Golden Oldie. Not really a What If, but technically a What If.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've never really read many What Ifs, apart from ones that we've really covered on the Multiverse of Badness. I mean, genuinely, I will happily admit that I today bought my first comic in about 6 years.
Wow.
So I'm a bit out of touch with actually reading comics, but Elseworld comics. I love the idea. I feel that the idea of multiverses in Elseworld is the perfect example of American creativity, because comic writing is so full of lazy conveniences and just being able to, you know, do whatever you want. Like, shit, I need to write a story about Spider-Man, but this time he's got a cool hat. It happens in a different universe. Take all responsibility on yourself. But then somehow turning that into the linchpin of the most successful movie studio currently working. It's beautiful. I just absolutely love it.
And what did you buy today?
I bought the omnibus of The Immortal Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard it's, my friend described it as The Hulk if it was done by David Cronenberg. So I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah, I read the end of the run and keep waiting to buy a collected edition so I could read the rest of it because it got such good reviews.
Well, if you want, HMV in Swansea, it's £20. I don't know if it's worth the journey for you, but it's there.
Thanks for the heads up.
Well, thank you both for being here, and thank you for listening, everyone out there. And if you're listening for the first time, after a quick summary of our alternate Earth we are visiting, we have Origins of the Story, discovering what inspired this other reality, exploring multiversity, diving deeper into our alternate universe, and pondering possibilities, examining the impact and what's followed or coming in the future. And with that, dear watchers, welcome to episode 57, and let's check out what's happening in the multiverse with today's alternate universe. And today we are asking the question that everyone has wanted an answer to from the beginning of time, the reason why comics exist. What if Aunt May had been bitten by a radioactive spider?
And what if Aunt May had been bitten by a radioactive spider? I've been asking this my entire life.
This is Marvel Designated Earth 3123, and we have covered Aunt May, as Mike shared, on episode 31 of The Multiverse of Badness, so people can go check that out. We talk a little bit about her first outing as a superhero there, and then... Mike, can you give us a brief summary of Earth 3123 and what happens when Aunt May is bitten by a radioactive spider?
Well, of course I can. Imagine, if you will, a forgotten lunch of cottage cheese and string beans, I believe, leads to...
Mashed string beans, I think.
Precisely. Imagine if this accidental circumstance leads to not Peter Parker turning into our Spider-Man, but instead the lovely... Aunt May.
I mean, you say lovely. In all fairness, the way they've drawn her in this book, it looks like she's run away from her own funeral.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
She's, quite the emaciated goblin look that they've given her.
Hey, now, let's not shame Aunt May.
I know.
This is not your Marissa Tomei, Aunt May. Let's just put it that way. Well, what was everyone's background with Aunt May?
I mean, Aunt May's just a character that's always been there in just terms of pop culture. But I mean, like, when I first got into comics, it was very much Spider-Man, Daredevil, that kind of run. A lot of the Marvel Knights stuff, it was like when I was coming up. So, like, Spider-Man has always been a character that's been with me, and it's... You know, it's just Aunt May. She's lovely. She's like the supportive motherly figure that's there to, you know, pick you up when you're down and accidentally walk in on you when you're passed out in your Spider-Man outfit. And occasionally die. You know, it's what Aunt May does.
Yeah, my experience is probably a little different because it seemed like every other episode or every other issue when I was a child... Someone was doing something to Aunt May. It's like she was kidnapped or she was in a hospital and somebody crashes through the room. And she's always injected into very unfortunate and dangerous situations that require her nephew, unbeknownst to her, to rescue her from said situation while she says, "Oh, I hate that Spider-Man guy." And it's always...
But he must really like me because he's always around.
Yeah. I mean, I was a big Spider-Man reader, going back to reading some of the McFarlane era, especially when Aunt May was dating Nathan, the equally elderly man who also looked very close to death and he was in his wheelchair. And then there's the great story in The Return of the Sinister Six where he is then killed. It's kind of tragic. And but then, like you were saying, Mike, then it did seem during especially the Clone Saga and stuff like that, that everything bad that could happen to Aunt May was happening. I remember her soul being trapped in hell after she had died and all these other things. And then, of course, into the animated series and Rosemary Harris. And definitely that was always the image of Aunt May I had in my head, this kindly elderly woman. And that's been shaken up a little bit now by, of course, Marissa Tomei and other portrayals. What about you, Guido?
She's dead, so you can move on.
And then, that's true. She's yeah, she didn't even need to. Sadly. She didn't even hit the elderly age of the traditional Aunt May.
No, before they fridged her. I mean, I know Aunt May. I know, like Zach said, I mean, Aunt May exists everywhere. Everyone knows Aunt May because she's part of the archetype. I never was a Spider-Man reader, so. I know, like, I've gone in and out of Spider-Man in the last 20 years. Like, I know she was dating Doc Ock for a while, which is kind of odd. And then she had cancer in Nick Spencer's run. I don't know what happened to that. But, yeah, I know her multimedia versions much better. I mean, mm-hmm. Lily Tomlin as Aunt May and Into the yep. Spider-Verse. We actually talked about, Rob and I were on an episode of 10 Cent Takes to talk about the Spider-Verse movies and talked a lot about the different Aunt Mays that are out there in media. So, yeah, I'd say we're all very familiar with Aunt May because anyone who knows anything about Spider-Man probably is.
Mm-hmm.
But not this version.
No. So let's dive in, get that hot, warm pie off the stove. Let's cut up some slices and dive into origins of the story.
Right now, on this very show, you're going to get the answer to all your questions. Our amazing story begins a few years ago.
And first up today, we are going to be discussing A Strange Tale Indeed. This is Strange Tales number 97 from June 1964, and it's entitled...
Nope, 1962.
In 1962, and it's entitled Goodbye to Linda Brown. Sounds like a 1960s song from, like, Herman and the Hermits or something. Goodbye to Linda Brown.
This was written by Stan Lee and penciled and inked by Steve Ditko. And I chose this because it's a really odd story as technically the first appearance of Aunt May and Uncle Ben. They're taking care of a superpowered child that's not their own. And almost certainly this isn't the 616. It predates the 616 existence. And of course, the Aunt May we all know, Maybelle Parker, debuted with Peter in Amazing Fantasy just a few months after this, 2 months later. But knowing you guys were joining us, Mike and Zach, I said, you know what? Let's go with the real original Aunt May because this is a weird story.
Honestly, I am genuinely, eternally grateful from the bottom of my soul that you have introduced me to this origin story for Aunt May and an oddly mustachioed Uncle Ben.
Yes. Well, I think the first question is, you know, it's not... Well, as you said, Guido, we're not in the 616 here, but it's not really the Uncle Ben and Aunt May. We know they're both an elderly white couple, but the Aunt May is a bit more vibrant than the Aunt May of Peter Parker.
But let's assume it's a prequel.
Yeah, it's a prequel.
After
that's
this,
true.
They move back to New York.
I'd like it to be a prequel.
Uh-huh.
After this, well, the events of this story, in their grief, move back to New York, kidnap their nephew. He got bitten by a spider. It was a whole palaver.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so who wants to tell the events of this story? What's Linda Brown's deal?
I would, if that's okay with the council, I would happily take
yes,
this one.
Yes, please.
So, like, this is a Stan Lee and Steve Ditko story, so it is... I like to think canonical, not to 616 Spider-Man, but this predates Spider-Man. The I like how Welsh I sounded then, Spider-Man. Oh, Spider-Man. The radioactively bitten Aunt May that we're here to discuss. That's my theory. So,
oh,
we are
I like that.
we're in a nice little seaside cottage almost. Me and Uncle Ben are looking after Linda Brown, a niece of theirs who is a wheelchair user. She's there. You can see she's got her. But right, so she. I can't not spoil the story without making this point.
It's she only 4 pages. Over,
she has a blanket over her legs, but like they're shaped through the blanket like legs here. But spoilers, let's just jump to the end of the story. She's a dolphin. I don't know what else I can say to that if you'd love to elaborate.
Yes, and Zoe and Aunt May and Uncle Ben are both sleepwalking throughout as well, so but and we don't quite know why, but at times they're both sleepwalking, and we know Linda wants to go out by the water, and one day, you know, she asks, oh, can I go out by the water, and then they never see her again, and then, you know, we just see in the final panel that, as you said, Zach, she's half fish. And not
well,
even
they
that
say
half
perhaps
fish.
She's been with us too long.
Oh yes.
So like,
yeah.
They knew she'd have to go back to the water at some point.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they just have a thing. Maybe they set up. Actually, no, because Peter wouldn't have been bitten in this. Never mind. Ignore me. I had another theory that would have contradicted my original theory.
They're trying to like raise superheroes.
Yeah, I just think they like kidnapping superhero children.
Yeah.
I have a couple of theories. Yeah. I think this actually is part of the real Spider-Verse. I believe that Namor the Submariner is this lady's dad. I believe that Namor the Submariner actually kills Uncle Ben in retaliation for them stealing his daughter after she comes back. And also, I believe that this is technically a half-sister to Spider-Man. And that is why when he was bitten by the radioactive spider, it unleashed part of his mutant genetics. And he wasn't... So yes, this all goes back to a real canonical version of Spider-Man. One last question. What does sleepwalking have to do with anything in this story other than to fill 3 pages?
Excellent question, my friend. There was no payoff to any of that sleepwalking nonsense.
I thought it was going to be, because I actually did not predict the twist ending. I thought it was like, oh, they were actually making this. Yeah, I thought they were like, well, you know, for 1962, Stan and Steve are really ahead of their time. And they're, you know, this person who's a wheelchair user and she's walking through the two people who are able to walk, you know, her relatives, and she's experiencing the world through their walking. And I guess maybe that's what's happening here, because Linda can't walk necessarily. So I was like, wow, this is actually really progressive that, like, she's that they're kind of telling this story and bringing, you know, disabilities to the forefront, but, you know, not quite what they were actually going for.
No, they kind of suckered you in and then hit you with the old she's a dolphin twist.
The old she's a dolphin twist.
Yeah.
The old dolphin.
The oldest trick in the book. Now I do
oldest trick in the book.
Now I do have one last thing I'd like to add, and we can talk about this story for days, but there's really not a lot to talk about. The line that captures my fancy the most in this is actually not in the story. It's at the end. It's like this type of story, then don't miss Amazing Adult Fantasy Comics. And I'm wondering, Amazing Adult Fantasy, were these sold in plastic bags behind the counter at a gas station? But no, it was actually Amazing Fantasy. They rebranded with issue 15, and then that was the final issue of Amazing Fantasy, and I guess it eventually turned into Spider-Man.
Well, yes. These bottom-of-the-page lines appear throughout the entire book. I read the whole thing, because all of these... There's an amazing story about a man who goes back in time and ends up in an insane asylum, but escapes the asylum, and the asylum keeper chases him, but they end up back in the normal time, and everyone thinks the asylum keeper's crazy, and they put him in an asylum. It was a whole romp. But throughout the entire book, I don't know if you've noticed, we have The Hulk is coming. Coming soon. The Hulk. The Hulk will be here soon. They would watch for The Hulk. They were definitely... trying to promote something. I'm not quite sure.
It's like subliminal advertising, kind of, because like you might see it, you might not see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
I couldn't help but see it. It was everywhere.
Yes. But I do think, you know, for this kind of short, you know, silly story, I mean, the art, the Steve Ditko art is really great. I mean, and the coloring, which is totally out of our realm. You know, there's one panel with Uncle Ben and Aunt May where they're both like orange and yellow and the background is all purple. And there's lots of those kind of cool coloring throughout, which definitely elevates this, you know, 4-page story.
it's almost reminiscent of the coloring in things like Afterlife with Archie Batman Black Mirror. And I now realize as I'm saying that, understand that they have the same artist. I'm spacing on their name. But anyway, yeah, I understand what you're
talking about. Yeah, even almost like also...
Francesco Francavilla.
Yes, yeah.
That's the one. Yeah. 10 points.
And, well, and even then, too, like a bit of like an Argento, Mario Bava. It's like got that Italian horror, yes. Suspiria kind of thing where like we're just going to make everything, neon pink for no real reason. It's not coming from reality. And I'm guessing Francesco Francavilla is definitely like pulling from those Italian horror masters, too.
Well, Ben and May's faces are constantly, like, horrified in this comic, which is why, like, the quote-unquote twist ending, it's sort of negated by her being, like, super happy with a ponytail and her nightgown on as she's flipping in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could have leaned a little darker.
Yeah, and to your point, Mike, she is going, you know, in the distance. I actually didn't notice it at first. There is an underwater kingdom, so that could be Namor's castle back there.
100%.
But, it also does make it look like she's just in a fish tank.
It's true.
The new SeaWorld attraction. They treat every attraction like shit. How about Julie the Dolphin Girl?
Right.
Linda Brown.
Too.
Linda Brown the Dolphin.
Forgot her name.
Well,
on a side note, goodbye Linda Brown is what I say every time I flush the toilet.
Why you weren't on the podcast.
I'm sorry.
The first time, yeah. Well, gang, I have a secret to tell you that I am, in fact, part crab. And I'm jumping into the ocean now, and I'm swimming out into our world of exploring multiversity.
I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question, what if?
And today we are asking that eternal question, what if Aunt May had been bitten by a radioactive spider, aka what if Aunt May instead of her nephew Peter had been bitten by a radioactive spider? And this is from What If number 23. It's the backup story in that issue. And this came out in October 1980.
And it's written by Steve Skeets, penciled and inked and colored and lettered by Alan Kupperberg, edited by Dennis O'Neill. And at this point, Steve Skeets had done a lot of Crazy, the Marvel magazine that was a humor magazine, and some comedy stuff. And then he actually went on to do Peter Porker. So he was big into the Spider-Man comedy, I think. And Alan Kupperberg had penciled a lot of Crazy and What If and probably one issue of every Marvel title in the 80s at some point. He was a big fill-in artist, it looks like. And Mike, you picked this issue for us. Can you tell us why?
Well, the main reason, of course, is Aunt May's a superhero and I am fixated on this. I don't know why. But to me, it's just amazing when generally young children or young adults become superheroes, or, you know, 30-year-olds at oldest. She's pushing, what, 60-some here? And you don't see the elderly represented in a positive light in comic books very often. This is an exception to where an elderly woman is actually empowered and willing to take on the father of one of our favorite characters, Leapfrog. Mm-hmm. And I was just super excited about it. I couldn't help myself.
That was like, you know, for example, when you're eating something and you eat all your favorite bits and then you eat a bit more and then there's a little favorite bit. It's like a nice little surprise. Yeah, when I turned the page and Leapfrog was there, I was just, what a treat.
Yeah, and especially, you know, how she beats him, because she doesn't use web shooters, this Aunt May.
No, she spins him over her head and hits him in the face Swansea style.
This is true. In all fairness, old ladies in Swansea are bloody terrifying. One thing I did like, even if it is jumping ahead a bit, just if we can have a quick chat about her costume.
Yeah.
Because it is the traditional Spider-Man colors, but she has updated it for the elder lady. It's got some nice touches, but what I really like is she's gone for frilly shoulder pads.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's given the artist license that when he's doing action poses, that it almost has the musculature mm-hmm. that you're used to in a superhero book. I thought that was a really clever little thing that they did.
Yeah.
I didn't quite notice that, but I see that now looking at the pages. That's a good observation. What is the deal with her hat, though?
It almost looks like some type of traditional Scottish bonnet.
Or like a chef's hat, but red.
It changes all the time, though, because like there's certain times that from a top down, it looks like a pirate hat. One panel, it looks like a mushroom.
and then sometimes it looks like a beret. I mean, yeah, maybe it is just a flexible hat, a hat for every occasion.
The Omni hat.
The multiverse of hatness.
Exactly. Yeah. And the reason I can't stop thinking about it as a chef's hat, though, is because, of course, instead of the web shooters, her special skill is discovered when she finds that too much yeast makes for this really sticky goo, and that she can use the sticky goo in a pastry squeezing thing, and that's how she can land when she is falling off of from high places, and that's also how she can capture Leapfrog mm-hmm. by putting it around his foot.
You know, I'm not letting her get away unusual. With this. Nobody cooks bread like that. Okay? I'm sorry. Aunt May is supposed to be a great cook. From what I've heard, she makes damn fine wheat cakes that Mary Jane likes. She apparently also crams cream cheese in a bag lunch, which can't be safe.
Yes.
However, I don't know what she has put in the oven. It's spilling out. It looks like the blob. It's not like a small amount. What is she making?
Yeah, do you know that
Dude,
movie,
she's
The Stuff?
She's bitten by a radioactive spider. She's under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
It's true. It is after she's bitten. That is
true. Yeah, she's coming to terms with a lot of stuff very quickly.
And my final what-if in this, and I got to ask you, page one, the fourth panel, I want to know what if this police officer wasn't in this universe. I have a feeling Aunt May would have been hit by the bus, and the guy she ran over probably would have knocked her block off. Because she is just like, I have to get this awful bag lunch to my frail-ass nephew as quickly as possible. And she's like, forget New York City, forget everything else that's going on. He needs lunch.
Yeah, it she's almost feels like that, that panel was taken, like, what should have been later in the story after she got the superpowers, because there's a man she's maybe knocked over, he's fallen down, there's another guy in the background who's like looking at in shock as what's happened, the guy in the foreground is also staring at her, the cop is staring at her, and he stopped the bus which maybe was coming to hit her. It doesn't really make sense why all of this is happening around a woman at this point who does not have superpowers.
Fast
one
on her
thing
feet
I did
for an
notice
old
when
exactly.
One thing I did notice going back to when she's put too much yeast in the oven. So the panel next to it, when you do the close-up, why does Aunt May have two sets of eyebrows? She has one above her eyes and one just under her hairline.
It's like Salvador Dali just took liberty and ruined one of the panels.
Wow, that's amazing. That might be a spider feature. She's sort of becoming spider-like in her brow.
Instead of growing all the extra eyes of a spider, she grows the eyebrows instead.
Or is she so wrinkly that those lower ones are just very heavy, deep
just
wrinkles?
Flaps of skin.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying she's got a full-blown Gordon Ramsay forehead.
All I know is Uncle Ben's so tired, she's running around in a Spider-Man outfit, and he's just sleeping right there.
Yeah. It's a great little thing that, every time we see Uncle Ben, he's just sleeping in this chair.
Yeah. So this was a fun adventure with Spider-Ma'am. Although she's not named in this, right?
I don't think she's named in this.
Yeah.
I don't think she's yet named in this. Okay.
It does also. It answers the question twice. What if Aunt May, instead of her nephew Peter, had been bitten by a radioactive spider? Yes, we find out she would become Spider-Ma'am, but we also find out that Peter Parker would remain the most ineffectual human being to have ever existed. Like, what is this? What is this kid about? What's he capable of? Absolutely nothing. Yes. Say it again.
Yes. And when we know always about, or what we think about Peter and Spider-Man, is that he is this super quick wit. He's quippy. And even though he's like maybe nerdy in real life, he's got all this great charisma when he is Spider-Man. And you don't get that at all here. He's like this fragile little child that she even has to take care of at the end, to the point where she's not even sure whether she could be a superhero because he needs so much coddling.
Well, and when she defeats Leapfrog, so Peter's talking to her, he says, "No, stay away from me, you horrible monster." Like, so he's so horrified by this old woman because she's wearing a red and blue costume.
Well, some of
like,
that I thought
there's
was
nothing that makes her so ugly.
But that was kind of, I thought, them doing what Aunt May for years was horrified by Spider-Man, right? That Aunt May hates the idea of Spider-Man. So they were kind of flipping it here. I mean, it's even more absurd, though, that he faints. So that maybe pushes it over the edge, but I was thinking that's right. Why she why he was so horrified by her.
Yeah, so quite a trip. I'm glad we went on that journey. Before we get into the next phase of Spider-Man's career, would anyone want more stories from this world? We actually do get them in a moment, but would you read an ongoing series of her? Do you want more? Do you want to see her in a movie?
Oh, definitely. I want to see her face off against the moms of all the other guys that weren't superheroes. And we just have like a universe of old people, you know, like the Hobgoblins.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. She could go up against the Spinister Six.
That is perfect. Whoa. Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Keto, I think we need to commission that art.
There, Zach.
Yeah. Like a Dr. Octopus, but each of his arms has a walker or a cane.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's one of those grabby things that old people used to get things
on. Yes, exactly. Yes.
Oh, we need to make this happen.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. All right, well, let's get to the next installment.
I know,
in
because,
her story.
You know, some would say, you know, this could have never been revisited ever, but you'd be wrong. So let's discover some pondering possibilities.
Will the future you describe be averted?
And Guido, so what are we talking about for our pondering possibilities this week?
Well, Spider-Man does actually come back a few times. So first, through the Spider-Verse story, they actually visit Earth 3123 to try to kill her. And she's going to sacrifice herself to save Ben and Peter, but of course ends up being saved by the Spider Army. And then we revisit that Earth in one of the Spider-Verse anthology books prior to the one we read, where it turns out she's formed a team. She's come out as the Spider-Man to Ben and Peter, and they form a team, Team Spider-Man. And then we encounter her yet again in this Spider-Verse anthology book, and it's just a really fun story with a lot to talk about. So I wanted us to read it.
Wow. Yeah. So because normally when we for most what ifs, it does not really come back, you know, into play ever again. So it's so interesting to hear that this crazy character has actually returned to comics several times.
Yeah.
I mean, when you strike gold, right? You don't let that property die.
It's true. You got to lean into it.
So
we read.
Oh, yes. So we read Spider-Verse, Volume 3, Issue Number 2, from January 2020.
Yeah, this is also her most recent outing, and it's written by Ryan North, penciled by Perry Perez, inked by Jordi Tarragona Garcia, colored by Marte Gracia, lettered by Joe Sabino, and edited by Nick Lowe. So, what'd y'all think of this?
Wild. I had no idea when we pick the What If, because obviously I'm not as familiar with newer comics, being an older man and not collecting as many new comics. However, when you guys sent me this book, I was like, what am I reading here? And within three or four pages, it goes off the rails. It's amazing. And as you said, it ties into the What If story. It's great. The plot makes Stan Lee's plot sometimes look like Stephen King, because the plot at the end was a little wonky, but we'll get to that.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah. But before you get to the end, I mean, we have to encounter, of course, Carnage, Aunt May.
That's so freaking amazing.
You're welcome for that. Bringing her into your life if you didn't know about her already.
Well, I mean, this, you guys are spoiling us. We've had Aunt May and the Dolphin Girl, Aunt May versus Leapfrog, and now Carnage Aunt May. This has been the best podcast in history.
Yeah. So in the story, you know, they fight this evil Ben, evil Peter, and evil Aunt May, who has the Carnage symbiote. Miles is there and also has to fight the evil Miles. It's the Miles we know traveling into different Spider-Verses in this miniseries to encounter and protect these different people. But I think the big twist or big ending, Mike, you're talking about, that is very Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, but at its worst, involves hearts. Can anyone make sense of the climax?
Nope. Not even going to try.
Again, going back to what I said about conveniences in comic book writing, they got to this point in the plot, and they were like, what are we going to do? And they're like, boys, why are we trying to make sense of this? Let's just put a fucking heart on the wall. Everyone in every conceivable universe shoot a web at it. Story done. Let's go to lunch.
Yeah.
But everyone in every conceivable universe did that, and it wasn't quite enough. It took the love of Uncle Ben and Peter to push it just over the edge. And yeah, yes. The convoluted conversation where Peter Parker is taking an ass whooping. And he's like, literally, it's like watching The Evil Dead 2 when Annie's about ready to get sucked into the vortex or whatever. She's sitting there mansplaining to Ash exactly everything that's going on. This feels like that because he's just sitting there trying to explain it to Uncle Ben. And Uncle Ben's making sense of it. And even Aunt May's like, oh, I know what to do. And I'm like, no, you guys are getting your ass whooped. And I want to say this. Carnage Aunt May is the scariest, possibly, like, supervillain I've ever seen. She is, I mean, I love this Carnage version. Bring her back. I mean, I haven't been this frightened of a kid since, or this frightened of a lady, a woman, of anything since, like, you remember the girl in The Grudge when she kind of walked around and freaked everybody out? This is like,
Yeah.
She is on that level, yeah. But yeah. It's,
or the ring girl, oh, as she like, yeah, crawls yeah. out. This is like that level.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm just still kind of stuck on, like, what is that shop? What incredible idea had someone come up with that in any possible conceivable universe, that shop would be open? Like, you know, that is impressive. They are onto a $1 million idea in every conceivable universe.
And we haven't even touched on the fact that we get, like, an evil Miles Morales in this wearing, like, a New Balance jacket or something. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And why is evil Peter Parker when he comes out of the vortex? It's just Kevin from Sin City.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not clear, too, like, if Ben, evil Ben and evil Peter have any powers or not, or if they're just evil. Because then, yeah, a lot of the time is evil Peter beating up on good Peter, and good Peter is. And Spider-Man is trying to get Peter to come up with a solution, but he's getting the bejesus kicked out of him at the same time. So I don't know how he's also coming up with all like these solutions while he's getting pounded by his doppelganger.
I mean, this is the same like kid Aunt that May fainted when bejesus. He saw Leapfrog.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. It is the same very sensitive, fragile Peter from the What If that we met.
I don't know. He's really putting Aunt May in her place here. He says in one of the panels, evil Aunt May, put a sock in it. Because that's going to solve the entire dilemma here.
Yeah, no. Well, I like how they keep the... They do a great job, or Ryan North does a great job of keeping the language for Aunt May and for this Peter very consistent. And they have this kind of old-timey way of speaking where they're using these kind of antiquated words, but it makes sense for this kind of super PG universe that I guess we find ourselves in. Yeah. Even the evil,
we do get...
even the evil Carnage Aunt May is kind of also speaks in that very same way. Like, it's not like Cletus Cassidy's kind of speaking. It has almost like an old lady kind of version of speaking, but then filtered through Carnage, which is so interesting.
I like that when they activate the heart powers of love, we get many, many other worlds where May Parker has become different characters. Mm-hmm. So you have like the Spider Gwen May, the Spider Woman May, you have the Miles Morales May, the Black Symbiote costume May, you have like every version of Spider-Man, but May
one
Parker.
Where she's just a giant spider.
Fantastic. The Fantastic yeah. Four, where she's got the bag on her head.
Yeah. And I also then love the part where we find out that this May Parker intentionally kept the bottom half of her face uncovered so that people would underestimate her because they'd see she was an old woman.
Yeah, that was that's a nice touch. I like that.
Yeah.
She was wearing a chef's
because
hat.
People's...
Chef's kiss because she's wearing a chef's hat.
Oh, yeah, no. In the first book, it was the Omni hat. This one, 100% chef's hat.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they really did lean into it here.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot about the costume and clothing because there's some great, you know, Peter and Ben also comparing. Maybe there's in a universe where they're not wearing a sweater vest, which is also shocking to them as well.
What if?
I do like at the end when Miles has helped May save the day. He's off to another Spider-Verse adventure. She gives him a baked treat to take with him, but also delivers a pie to that. Like, or is it this universe's Miles Morales? Because we've also had evil Miles Morales, yet we get a scene of Miles Morales in his civilian clothing, holding a pie, saying the words, "Anonymous pie?"
And also two panels later we get to see Peter Parker looking timid but also looking at, let's not forget, part of a symbiote that was left behind by evil Aunt May.
And at the end, for now, question mark, I feel like we could end up back in this universe once again and have to, Aunt May have to fight Peter.
I've just noticed that in Peter Parker's bedroom, he's got a movie poster for Quick and Angry 9.
Yes, he does. So, yeah, I think this is a fun story to build on the spectacular Spider-Man's stories. Anything else anyone wants to add about it?
Honestly excited to see if we do get the story of Spider-Man having to go up against symbiote Peter. And not like an Elseworld symbiote Peter, her own Peter, the child she raised.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an amazing story.
Yes. Now we know, though, that this Peter is so horrible and such a pushover that I feel like it wouldn't be much of a fight.
I think that Carnage would be that more... able to corrupt him.
He's like a blank vest. He's like an empty vessel, blank slate for the Carnage symbiote to just like go bonkers.
Mm-hmm. We've come up with some great comic ideas so far on this episode.
Now wait a minute, okay? We don't know.
Somehow tie the spinner to six in.
I'll tell you what, we're making an assumption that the symbiote ends up applying itself to Peter. What if it actually applies itself to Eugene Petillo? And the evil Eugene Petillo goes through a multiverse, and to keep him from ruling that multiverse, the real Eugene Petillo in his Frogman outfit has to run into a Quickie Burger and eat a hamburger along with all the other multiversal Eugene Petillos to save and open a portal to send this back.
Again, 10 out of 10 would read that book.
It's all about Frogman.
Yeah. That's a good proposal. I like it. A lot of potential. So obviously we can't even really discuss if the What If inspired this, because yes, it's in the What If universe. This is a unique What If in that it had sequels in its universe, so there wasn't really anything inspired.
I want to know who was going through the Marvel archive. You know, I don't know if Peter Sanderson was working there anymore, but like, who was going through and finding this? Because it's a backup story from a What If. Yeah. So like, was Ryan North reading this and getting inspired? Or that's the story I really want to hear too.
This was the week that Zach actually worked for Marvel before they listened to our show and found some of the horrible things we said, and he was fired the next day. But this is the one story he actually brought to the table, and it was inspired by it. Yep.
I walked into the board meeting, and I said, "Lol, boys, have I got the idea for you?" So I start all formal business meetings with "lol," apparently.
Well, we're all better off for it. So, any other concluding thoughts on Aunt May, on what versions of Aunt May we enjoyed seeing or want to see?
Do you both have a favorite Aunt May, you know, from the movies, too, or from any of the comics that we've read?
Spoilers. Cover your ears if you haven't played Marvel Spider-Man on PlayStation, the first one. The story with Aunt May in that is gripping and... Like, I don't want to spoil it if any of you haven't played it or plan on playing it. Am I okay to spoil?
Well, you've given fair warning. Yeah, fair I played warning. It and Rob won't play it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god, so. The end of that game when you watch Aunt May die fucking broke me. Oh my god, I was literally in tears at that point. Horrible.
Yeah,
horrible,
I agree.
Horrible.
I think that is a great Aunt May. Yeah, I totally agree. I was actually thinking about her when we were talking earlier about the different Aunt Mays we've seen, because both the design, she has the right like look, but then the voice acting, yeah, she's a good Aunt May.
Yeah, not to say this about this story that you introduced here is I am obsessed with Carnage Aunt May. I think she is just wild to me. She's my favorite of all of them, because if you look about 4 or 5 pages back when she's like leaned down and her knees are up, I mean, she's horrifying looking. She's got sharp teeth, and it's an amazing picture. And you know, you get the nice cute Aunt May, but then you just get this Aunt May that literally, if you didn't know that was Aunt May and you threw that against any superhero and said it was just some female angry symbiote, she would scare you to death. The only thing that even brings some kind of levity to it is the fact it's Aunt May, but it doesn't have to be. Symbiotes can be pretty powerful. They don't need a strong host. So she is absolutely frightening to me.
What I love about that panel specifically is that, as you say, the way that she's positioned with her knees, she's almost like Deadite-esque in her body.
Yes, yeah, totally.
But with the legs in the foreground, it just insinuates that she's about to bite out Spider-Man's like Achilles. It genuinely like it leads to like what could be a really, really horrible moment of violence.
What idea I'd really like to see now is this is how we get Marissa Tomei back in the MCU is
Carnage Aunt
May symbiote.
Yes.
Well, you know, we again, spoilers if you haven't seen the movie, but in the stinger, right, for the last Spider-Man movie, we know some of the symbiote was left on Earth, right? So if the symbiote
possessed Marissa Tomei's dead body.
Dead body, bring it back to life somehow? Yeah, I mean, totally.
Yeah.
I want to see A24 make a movie with Marissa Tomei and Jon Favreau maybe playing Uncle Ben. I don't know, some Uncle Ben character, but raising a secluded dolphin child.
Yeah.
I think that could be a good film.
Gonna say is all I want to see now is bring Sam Raimi back to the Spider-Verse and let him direct the next movie, Multiverse of Madness style, with Marissa Tomei symbiote. I am 1,000% down for this. It would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Linda Brown, and then it ties into the A24 spinoff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, they could bring in another creepy old lady from X, and that, you're bringing all the old ladies
yes.
in. Oh, yeah.
Get our Spinister 6 going on the
A24 old lady cinematic universe.
So anything else to add before we wrap up?
Not really. The one thing I do want to add is, as a fan of the show, it is amazing to be here. I want to thank you for having us on. I am having a blast. I know, you know, Zach has checked you guys out as well, so hopefully he's having a blast as well. This has been a good time, and this is a great format and just a great concept, and I love your shows. And that's all. I'm just standing over here. Aww. Sorry.
Thank you.
Well, you are the Aunt May Stan account right now. I have to let our listeners know that that's your username in our
yes.
window.
Yeah,
right
and
now,
I so. Mean, you all have so many great episodes. I think the first episode of you all I listened to was your David Letterman episode, because I was such a big Letterman fan when he went off the air. I went dumpster diving, and I have part of his set down in our basement.
Oh, whoa.
And like he, once I discovered, wait, David Letterman was in a comic, it was like mind blowing. But thank you both so much for being here. Thank you, of course, mm-hmm. Guido. We have come to our end, but I have been Rob.
And I've been Guido.
And dear watchers, thank you for listening. And also a special thank you to Mike and Zach from Yay. Multiverse of Badness.
Thank you. Please. Thank you very much for having us.
No, thank you. And please tell everyone where they can find you.
Sure. You can reach us on the Twitters at Multiverse of Bad. You can actually check out our podcast, which is how we met these guys in the first place. You can just go to multiverseofbadness.com and reach us there. If you want to send us an email, Zach has a special email address just for this show that he's going to give you right now that 100%, and I kid you not, actually works.
100% can send us an email at remember that time that Uncle Ben and Aunt May kidnapped that dolphin girl and then lost her at multiverseofbadness.com.
Oh, I am emailing you guys tomorrow, believe me.
We love it.
Well, the reading list, if you want to check out these issues, is in the show notes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Dear Watchers.
And leave us and Multiverse of Badness a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back soon with another trip through the multiverse.
In the meantime, in the words of Guatu, keep pondering the possibilities.
Stay frosty.